Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the 2019 NBA Draft Preview. Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. As you can tell, I'm a bit under the weather, but we are going to push through this. I am joined, as always, by Kevin Zimmerman. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's November, everyone, and Kellen's already just like, this sun season might be slowly eating at him if we're judging on his health right now.
My body is canceling out pretty much the wear and tear of a sun season. So we are recording this on Thursday at about 3 o'clock. So this is about 4 hours before tip of the Boston game. Who knows if you listen to this after the Boston game and the mood has changed. But for now, I can honestly say that this feels like the lowest point the franchise has been at since we started this podcast about 3 seasons ago, I want to say. We've pretty much been doing it during this whole really bad run. But I can say, in my opinion, I think this is the lowest point. Because I'm sitting there, I'm covering the Brooklyn game. They lost 104-82. I'm sitting there covering the Brooklyn game, and I'm writing my DeAndre Ayton thing during the game because I was going to be like, yeah, Suns got blown out again, whatever. Like, this is a bunch of DeAndre Ayton stuff because we've written the effort and that type of recap like 400 times. No one needs to read that a 401st time. I'm writing that, and then when four minutes come, the boos start coming, and I'm like, oh, interesting. And then I just keep writing again, not paying attention on the court because the game's over. And then the boos keep coming, and I'm like, okay. And then I walk out to the concessions as the game is ending, and I hear loud boos when they go off the court, and I'm like, oh, interesting. And that's not saying anything that like the fans should have been booing before. It was just a different reaction, and I think it kind of speaks to expectations were up for this team, but they were up from the Suns. The Suns were the ones really plugging and chugging this whole thing of how improved they're going to be. And especially after the Toronto and Memphis game, the last time we podcasted was in between the Oklahoma City and San Antonio game, so we didn't even get a chance to. I think if we would have podcasted after the Memphis game,
yeah,
we would have been like, oh, it's not a thing. Like the 6 games in a row where the effort kind of sucked, it's not a thing. Toronto and Memphis, they tried and they fought back at multiple points in the game, and in Memphis they actually won, or against Memphis. And then the Brooklyn was the worst of any of those games by far.
Worst game, maybe, just because that team, like, that team's a well-coached team.
Yeah.
And it's a young team, but when Caris LeVert takes a step forward and they have the pieces, they're familiar with their coach, they're familiar with the system, and then they have a really good game plan to shut down Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, it makes you look really bad. So let's back this up, too, because I don't think they looked bad against the Raptors. I don't think they looked bad against the Grizzlies in most respects. And so maybe we're blowing it out of proportion to some degree, because look, young teams will have bouts of just like, what happened that game? Well, we just didn't show up, right? If you have one of those in every three, it's going to look terrible for a full season, because let's say you win one of the other two, even that's only a third of your games. But when you put that in perspective of, we've seen this time and time again, every game but Dallas, Toronto, and Memphis. Are there any others I'm missing where they actually look good through, for the most part, a full game? I don't think so. Then that's when it's not an outlier. It's a trend.
So someone on Twitter put this in perspective for me. I realized that if Devin Booker isn't Devin Booker, if he's just like a really good two guard and not like a future superstar kind of guy, and doesn't take over the Dallas game late and doesn't take over the Memphis game late, Suns are 0-10 right now.
Yeah.
They are actually 0-10. That is a very real thing that could have happened. The 121-100 score is very misleading. Booker just went absolutely insane on his own, pretty much. And the Memphis game, he contributed to nearly every point that was scored in the fourth quarter. I think what changed for me is, so we cover these games, right, where they get smoked and the effort's not there. We go in the locker room and Eric Bledsoe is saying the same exact kind of thing. PJ Tucker is the only one that sounds pissed, really. Everyone else is kind of just whatever. They're just, yeah, we got to be better. We're gonna try and fix this and all this kind of stuff. Devin Booker sounded like he was pretty much devastated, and he called it embarrassing. I wouldn't say devastated, actually. I would just say he sounded pissed off. He said, this is embarrassing. This has got to stop. Just a lot of stuff that you don't normally hear in this type of situation where a team is projected to win roughly 30 games. And it's different, though, because this is a way worse 2-8 than it looks like, and that's crazy to say.
Yeah.
DeAndre Ayton said the same kind of stuff. And then obviously Igor Kokoschkov, who's the first-year head coach going through this, said a lot of the same stuff as well. And that, to me, the booing was a thing. And I was like, okay, maybe I have to write about this. And then once Booker started talking, I was like, oh, yeah, like this is as bad as I think it is right now. And we'll move on to Terry Rozier in a second and what can come after this as a result. But I'm starting to think that, as someone who doesn't really like Terry Rozier as a starting point guard that you trade a significant amount for or you sign to a lucrative deal for, I still think you have to do it because this needs to be fixed soon or else you are going to have your superstar want to leave. We are already at that stage where within a year and a half, 2 years, it would not be crazy for him to ask for a trade. If this continues and he asks for a trade in January, would anyone really be surprised?
He has no leverage.
He has no leverage right. at all, but...
I mean, so... the issue for me is when you hear Booker say those things, when you hear Ayton say those things, are they actually standing up in front of the team and having any sort of effect, even if they are doing that? I don't know if they are.
Yeah.
Are they doing that? And then if they are doing that, are they having an effect? Like, Jimmy Butler can go and do that, and like... whoever likes him on the Timberwolves will be like, yeah, Jimmy's fighting for us and Karl Anthony Towns will shrivel back and whatever. Can Trevor Ariza do that? He's not like a guy who can, like, he's well respected, but I don't know if he has the clout. Jamal Crawford could do that, except he's not playing, so I don't know if he would even do that. Igor seems, at least to us, he might be completely different with his players, to be more quiet. So it's really just like, in a locker room where losing has happened since 2010, pretty much, aside from 1 year, like, does anyone have the credentials to like galvanize their teammates, bring people together, have one of those players only meetings where you just say, hey, like, we need to stick together through this? And that's the problem, is you see things like, are TJ and Josh Jackson, like, are they fracturing because their playing time and their roles are suddenly just not consistent and they're getting benched because they're not playing well?
That's what they wanted the Houston guys to do, but honestly, they look more lost than Josh Jackson does. They look like they have no idea what they signed up for. They looked like the type of guys who, and I don't even think they're wrong in thinking this coming in here, but all right, we're going to be veterans. We're going to help them along the way. We're going to say the right things in the locker room and it's going to translate on the floor. It's not that simple here with how much damage has been done here. It's just not that simple. And I think that's a really great point. It's like there is no solution to this. It seems like
it's talent. I think I've been saying it like,
yeah,
Trevor Ariza shouldn't be forced to be a playmaker off the bounce that much. Ryan Anderson, everyone complains about them. I think they're trying, and
Me
they
too,
just
yeah.
are being asked to do too much that doesn't fit them. That's why they're so great in Houston.
They have situations where you can see they're not trying, but at the same
yeah.
time, it's just as much as anyone else doesn't try in this league. I hate to break it to everyone, but not every single player tries really hard every single possession. It's just not a thing. I'm sorry.
It's even for the like
even for the most energy, big hustle dudes and big motor dudes there are, they just don't.
I have off possessions when I play pickup because you get tired and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a roster that's. Because I've been around the Cardinals during an also very abysmal season, it's the same thing where you have a new coach coming in. Here's my scheme, and it does not fit the personnel. And it's a matter of, okay, well, you're going to have to meet in the middle. You're going to have to use what you have which is a bunch of guys who can't dribble the basketball or make smart plays and be careful with the ball. And you have to make an offense for that. Their offense is not, it's for multiple ball handlers. And that's why we keep, I keep saying it, like point guard, small forward, power forward.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
To take it back, I did this through three games. I think our first podcast after it was three or four games. I'm about to sneeze and I don't know what to do.
Push
I
the
think
cough
it's
button.
Going away, but I didn't want to stop talking and just, I think it's gone now. Okay. So after three or four games, I looked at what I wrote as a season preview piece, which were these five questions that to me were going to answer if this team was going to win 30 plus games. The first one is, can the Wings adapt to the offensive system? I think what's actually happening is the Wings are adapting to the offensive system, but they're not the right Wings to adapt to the system. It's just the wrong collection of players. We're going to talk about him a little bit later on and more so why we're already watching him, but you watch Zion and watch him dribble in transition and pass the ball, and you're like, that's the type of guy Igor wants. That's the type of player that makes sense for him. You watch RJ Barrett, who's like this score driver type of guy, but he can go off the dribble and he can make plays with the ball as a playmaker. Even Cameron Reddish in that game showed a little bit of that as well. So all three of those guys are that type of player. Trevor Ariza can do it. TJ Warren can do it, I guess. He can try and do it and try and improve at it, but at the end of the day, they're just not the right guys for it. Josh Jackson is probably the one guy who made the most sense for it, but he's clearly just in another dimension right now. We don't know where he is. And Mikal Bridges is just a rookie. You can't really expect him to come in here and do something that he's not even really supposed to be doing at this stage in his career anyway, or maybe not even in a later stage of his career. Is he good for that role? So I think that's the problem here, is a lot of different things put together.
Yeah.
But I think the main one is just, like you said, which is this is not a very good team, and everything that is going to go wrong has gone wrong so far. Nothing has gone right besides Booker
is good
playing well when he's healthy. And people who claim Booker is bad are going to be like, oh, what about the last three? What about what Caris LeVert did to him last game? He's still running around at like 70% maybe right now. And Caris LeVert's awesome. So
yeah, he's
played
better.
Really well. Do we even want to talk about what the Nets did to Booker and Eden, or just kind of move on to point guards instead, or Terry Rozier?
I don't really.
Yeah, I mean,
Aiden gets exposed at different things, like once every three games is where we're at.
Yeah, that's where we're at, and he looks impressive in the other ones, and he's just not at that stage in his career yet. We kept saying he was raw, and we're just seeing moments where he's going to need some time. He was not going to come in here and not even dominate. He wasn't even going to come in here and just be a great player right away, which was, I think, one of the things that I talked about as a possibility in them being a solid team this year, but it's clearly he's not going to be that guy, which there's nothing wrong with that. I was about to say he can't be Luka Doncic just to really piss people off.
you kind of did.
He can't be the best player on his team right away. And yeah.
Terry. So what happened?
Yeah. Tell us where this came up. It came up in a lot of different places at once.
A little while ago, our own John Gambadoro said that the Suns had checked in on a bunch of starting caliber point guards. Terry Rozier was among them. So this popped up. Was it Shams's article? It was Shams's article where he mentioned Phoenix had been aggressively pursuing them, him, Terry Rozier, even before Ryan McDonough was fired. So it kind of just was written in the way to insinuate it's still happening before and after Ryan McDonough was fired. That's not surprising. Other teams are interested in Terry Rozier, but then when you consider like the unlikelihood of that happening because the Celtics are good and they wouldn't want to give away arguably, their best player from last year's playoff run, maybe Tatum could be up there, but one of their key pieces, because they want to win this year. Bill Simmons tweeted that Rozier was not really happy with his playing time because Kyrie rings back, Marcus Smart re-signed they have a lot of talent around him. His minutes, he's like a 3-minute bump down from where he was last regular season. This after he played a lot and was starting in the playoffs. So that's understandable. He's going to be a restricted free agent. So the question is, it doesn't seem like the Celtics want to trade him right now, which is fair because they shouldn't. But if you're the Suns and you know this information, which apparently every team knows and now they do, then what can you do to get Terry Rozier, and should you do anything to get him? There are caveats to, yes, go get him. But, yes, go try to get him, probably. Right?
Yeah. At this point, we have to go beyond the local perspective here of why would you ever try and win more games? Why would you ever give up a draft pick or something like that? This is beyond that at this point.
You don't have to worry about that. They're going to be bad with or without him.
And on top of that, this needs to be fixed as soon as possible. So if there is a point guard that you can get that is only 24 years old, and as someone who isn't a fan of him, like I said earlier, in terms of his claim, the claim many make that he's a top 12, 13, 15 point guard in the league, I'm not quite there yet. But what you wrote in your piece was that he's pretty much a starting caliber point guard in this league. Now, is he top 20? Is he top 25? Is he top 10, top 15, whatever? Where does he fall in there? We're not really going to say. But he is a starting caliber point guard. He is 24. He is restricted free agent. You're going to be able to pretty much hold on to him if you trade for him. It's the same thing they did with Brandon Knight. Oh boy, we're back again. Here we go. Same age and everything.
And blood. To
yeah.
Different, yeah.
Same, third time's the charm, eh? You can hold him under control for another 5 years now. Okay, now you've got a starting caliber point guard. You've got Book. You've got Ayton. You've got Bridges, Jackson, Warren, whatever comes of the three of them. And then you make a good signing or two in free agency. Let's say you bring in someone like Thad Young, or you are the team that really goes after Nikola Mirotic, or Taj Gibson is your four now. That sounds like a Tyson Chandler signing. I'm sorry. I'm just looking at a list of free agents right now, and I'm saying that people nationally are going to look at the Suns and be like, why didn't you just tank with Booker and Ayton and all these young guys for two more years and then go after free agents instead of trying to win?
Because you haven't lived in feet, yeah.
Instead of trying to win 30 games this year and then trying to win 35 to 40 games next year and then maintaining that level of, like, look, if getting Nikola Mirotic is paying him, overpaying him, or some of these free agents, they're going to have to overpay to get them, just do it. I'm not even at the point now where I'm going to really fairly judge this. If you overpay to trade for Terry Rozier, that's fine, because that's just what you have to do right now with the shambles this team is in right now. And people are going to disagree with me and say, you can't really panic right now. Oh yeah, you can. You definitely can, because your goal should always be Devin Booker when he's in his mid-20s and DeAndre Ayton. When Devin Booker pretty much hits that point where he's 24, 25, 26, and it's like his prime 4 to 5 years are right now, and DeAndre Ayton is right there about 2 years behind him, that's when you can start to play this game that we're talking about not playing right now, which is like, all right, be really smart with your money, go here and go there. But you have to give like Nikola Mirotic a ridiculous 3 or 4 year deal or something like that, or someone even higher on these types of lists of upcoming free agents, like a Paul Millsap, for example, or a Blake Griffin, like a couple years ago. Blake Griffin's obviously not a free agent, but that type of signing, where 2 years ago we were like, oh no, thank you. Now it's way different now. It's way, way different. And that is why I barely talked about Terry Rozier there, but I think that's more of what this is about than anything.
So what do we talk about now as far as, let's see, what do you, if you're the Suns, want to give up? Because you don't want to trade away your top pick. That might be the very top pick for him because he's not that good.
Gambo has proposed on the radio top three protected. I say top five.
Because I said top five.
I think at least top five.
That's what the Suns' negotiating point should be.
I think top five, and then you can throw in other things here and there, too. It doesn't really matter. You just Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, Mikal Bridges, and that pick should be somewhat protected, in my opinion. I think top five, you're looking at this draft class, it projects to have a top four that is very, very high, and then there's pretty big drop-off after that, and that's at this stage in the season, so there could be a kid or two that comes out of nowhere like they usually do, and now you're looking at, like, okay, you want to be in the top five or the top six. It's so important for this draft class specifically that I think you would have to have it at least top three protected. I think if push came to shove and Boston kept, we kept going for like 2 weeks, they're like, top three protected, that's all we're doing, I think I would do it.
The interesting part, which is where we bring in how we were both watching Duke's very first game, knowing that this is the reality. It was the same night, right, as you watching the Nets. You probably went, or you were watching there, and you went home and you see Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish destroying Kentucky, which is a pretty good Kentucky team that was
probably
ranked ahead of them.
A top five most shocking college game of all time. Kentucky was favored by a point and a half, and they got beat by 34.
They were number two, right? And
yeah.
Duke was first. Why was Duke number four?
Me and you both don't follow college basketball really on a national scale, like hardcore enough to object to that, but when I saw that, I was like, what? They have the three top prospects in the draft. Why wouldn't they be number one?
Because the people who vote in the AP poll don't watch high school basketball, probably.
Yeah, I guess. Well, now they know they're wrong, so.
They can fix it quickly, yeah. But yeah, it's, so we were watching that at this point in the season, and the interesting part, the point I was getting to was, if you're the Suns, I know you have to rush and like try to fix this, but regarding Rozier specifically, or anything that deals with, all right, do you want to trade that pick? I think you want to wait a little bit, because I don't think you want to deal it like right now.
Yeah.
If something's, like the Celtics say, let's do it, and say it's top three or four protected, and then it turns out two kids come up who are amazing that we don't see. And I'm just curious how that plays into how you operate as an NBA team. By the way, off topic, speaking of operations, they haven't hired any of all those basketball operations people they fired. They fired McDonough, director of scouting, assistant GM Pat Connolly, who was also a very, his job was like, go scout people. To my knowledge, they haven't hired anyone, which is concerning, because it's like, all right, you have two guys taking the GM job, but also you're not, what are you doing as far as scouting? I'm sure they have scouts still, but
where does, they haven't interviewed anyone for the GM position rank in terms of the most concerning things on the team right now? Like, seventh? Sixth?
That always concerns me.
It's I'm saying it's an extremely concerning thing that isn't even in the top five.
It concerned me when Jay Triano finished out the season. And I know, like, in the middle of a season, it's really hard to say, I'm going to hire a basketball coach when you can't interview people. But especially GM, when it's, like, I think it's a different game where you could definitely go searching right now. But we already knew, based on those reports, it seems like James Jones is keeping his job, whatever you think of that, but it's concerning that they haven't filled their staff back out.
So you're saying you would hold the pick for a bit?
Yeah, sorry I went on that rant, but yes.
Yeah, I was saying, it made it sound like I was saying do it tomorrow, but I'm saying get it done before the deadline. Just get it done as soon as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Realistically.
I mean, it's also a matter of, like, even in Rozier's case, you have to wait for him to get that disgruntled, for him to be like, hey, Celtics, I'm going to leave you. His agent tells him that, and then suddenly they're going to be safe about it, but they're going to have to start kind of shopping him. Other guys, this can happen too. Like, you don't know who's, like, do you want Kevin Love on the Suns? I don't know, but they need a power forward, and he's going to start, like, There are things that can happen.
He's a really good name to bring up, because he falls into the same kind of thing I talked about. Like, trade a lot for Terry Rozier, sign Terry Rozier to a lot of money, and then trade way too much for Kevin Love. I'm going to say they lost those deals, obviously, but at the same time, okay, now we're actually going somewhere. And people are saying, where are the point guards in this draft? Who's the point guard? Who can we draft a point guard? You don't want to draft a point guard right now. No way, because you're going to have to, well, look at what's happening in Dennis Smith Jr. right now in Dallas. I think Dennis Smith Jr. still has a chance to be really, really good, but he's just showing how long it takes for point guards in this league. Even Trae Young is having his on and off nights. He looks really, really good when he's good, and he looks pretty bad when he's bad. And that's just how young point guards are in this league. And getting someone like Rozier, who has playoff experience, who's 24 already, and
plays defense.
Plays defense, shoot. Especially. He has his weaknesses, and I think we're waiting to really discuss that until this heats up a little bit, at least, to like break him down
his
fully.
Shooting numbers look like Brandon Knight's.
Yeah, he's shooting 32% on two-pointers this year. It's really, really bad. But you just need guys like him right now. Quick RJ Barrett, Zion Williamson thoughts before we go, since we both kind of watched. We're not going to break down them on our big board just yet. I teased. So that was my tease at the opening.
You've probably watched more Zion than me. But like everyone's like, he doesn't have a comp. And within watching like 3 minutes, I'm like, he looks like Draymond with a lot more meat on him. Like, I didn't know he could move like laterally like that for being a big dude. And then he like had this crossover from like 25 feet out and just explodes, first step explosion. And then obviously he can jump really well. And it's like, this is like Draymond on steroids, and he's running point. That's probably the only reason why I thought that, but undersized power forward, like, I don't think he will have a problem slotting in.
I've got three comps I meld together.
Oh my gosh.
Charles Barkley, obviously. Okay. That's the most obvious one that you see when you watch him. I think that's easy.
Yeah.
Blake Griffin, because he's a high, 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 high level athlete, but he's skilled with the ball.
Yeah.
Bo Jackson, just because like I've never seen anything like that, and the way people talk about Bo Jackson when they were watching him growing up, yeah. And I didn't get to watch him growing up, is the way I'm going to talk about watching Zion. I tweeted out just a 3-screenshot thing of him going in for a layup, and I was like, look at how high he is off the ground so quickly, and then he lays the ball off the glass to the right of the backboard square, like on the high end of it. He could have easily dunked it, but he just laid it up off there, and I was like, oh, jeez. Like I watched that live in my chair at this game, and I just like jumped back for a layup because there's just nothing like him. RJ Barrett, I thought looked really interesting. I think he's another guy where you look at him in Phoenix and just what we just talked about earlier, what I talked about earlier with he can do a little bit of passing, a little bit of moving. I think there's some gunnery concerns there. He took 26 shots in that game, I think, but a lot of... There's like different players I like with him. Harden, obviously, because he's a lefty who does the lefty stuff, but he gets to the rim at will and really knows how to draw fouls and absorb contact. There's some DeMar DeRozan in there with the way he does that kind of stuff as well. And I can't remember the last one. I had another one for him, but
D'Angelo Russell. Lefty thing. Gunner, not really a point guard, big.
Who's really long like that? Have you noticed how long his strides are? That's the one thing I always notice with him. It's just like athletically.
Yeah.
Oh, Ben Simmons. It's one of those things where once he gets going and you just see how much ground he can make up in such a quick amount of time, I think Ben Simmons there. Maybe those are obviously super high-level caliber comps, but both those guys can't shoot and it's worrying. But we'll get to that in February, folks. It's a long way to go. Cam Reddish looked good. He has the highest upside of anyone in the draft. That's what everyone's tagline is for him, and they're right, because he's a 6'9 ball handler who can defend all 4 or 5 positions, depending on how big the center is, but he doesn't really try that hard sometimes and doesn't really look that confident with the ball sometimes. So, but playing third fiddle on that team might be the best thing that ever happened to him, because he's not going to be asked to do too much.
What's coming? You get to go to the Celtics game. Have fun.
Thanks. I will.
You get to watch some good... One team will play good basketball.
2-game road trip after that. New Orleans and Oklahoma City. Oh, boy. 2 games back at home. San Antonio and Oklahoma City. Oh, boy. Ooh. And then a 4-game road trip starts with Philly, but then they get Chicago, so maybe that's a game they can take. And then Milwaukee and Detroit. It gets brutal. Indiana, L.A., the Clippers... Orlando is a team that can beat the Lakers, Sacramento, Portland, Miami, the Clippers, San Antonio.
We'll see. I feel like the Brooklyn game you could just overblow because of the booing, because of the effort. Also, I don't think that team is that bad. I mean, the Suns are worse than everyone all the time, but if you don't show up, you don't show up. You're going to get it handed to you. But if it keeps happening, yeah, it's at some point, dam's going to break. And that's when things will get interesting, because there's not much they can do other than make rash trades or fire people, which the Suns have been known to do both of those things in recent years.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know, man. It's a middle ground, I think, like you said. I don't think they're going to have many performances that are worse than that Brooklyn one, but they are playing the Boston Celtics tonight, and
this isn't made of wood, but I'm trying to knock on stuff.
Brad Stevens is the best coach in the league, and I'm sure he saw what Kenny Atkinson did to DeAndre Ayton, and
he probably just like, I'm going to sleep early tonight. I'm going to get a good one. We'll just do that
yeah,
thing.
They play Denver tomorrow, I think, so they've got bigger fish to fry, I guess. But I'm interested to see how they respond, as is everyone else. Dan Bickley wrote a scorching hot column on our site. My goodness me, he set everyone to flames, as he honestly should. And there was nothing exaggerated or really wrong in what he wrote. Did you think? I didn't.
No.
Which is saying something because of how fierce it was. My goodness. So that's on ArizonaSports.com. That's where you can find us. Empire of the Suns podcast is what we are recording right now. We also write a bunch of stuff on ArizonaSports.com for the Empire of the Suns blog, which is at Empire of the Suns on Twitter. He is K Zimmerman AZ. I am at Kellen Olson. That's where you can find us on the Twitter. We're on there quite a bit. We enjoy the Twitter. It's a fun little place. And
true.
When people start doing the upside down stuff, like, let's not do that. Let's have that be.
Try to read that.
Yeah. Le'Veon ruining fantasy teams and timelines all over the world. All right. See you next time, everyone.